World released its new AI-powered brand discovery product. CEO Ron Goodman says it makes CTV ads context sensitive and that AI will make ads more targeted and valuable. Listen on for more.
Welcome to this week's edition of Inside the Stream. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from InScreen Media joins me, of course. Hey, Colin, how are you?
I'm doing well, Will. I'm really excited about our podcast today because we have a special guest. But I think before we get to the special guest, we're going to do a couple of quick news items that caught our attention this week.
Absolutely, and I'm going to get us started. And actually, I had two short news items that are very much related to one another that I was following closely this week. One is that, and they're both sports related, I should mention. NBA is, as we all know, in new negotiations on its, or negotiations on its new media deals. And this past Monday, the exclusive financial negotiation window with ESPN and TNT Sports, which have been primarily carrying the NBA games, closed, and that means that now the NBA is free to start negotiating with other potential distributors, and really the focus is mainly on streaming. And it seems that Amazon is perceived as maybe being the most interested party, and there are others certainly in the mix as well, whether it's Google or Netflix, Apple, Netflix, who knows. But this is all going to unfold, you know, probably over the next 6 months, 9 months, give or take. Very interesting to follow what role streaming plays. Related to that, another article this week indicated that FIFA, which is, of course, global soccer's governing body, is negotiating with Apple to create a brand new tournament, brand new major tournament that would be like a World Cup style month-long tournament that would be played in the United States. And this would happen next summer, so a year from now. It's still unclear whether it's going to happen or how much the deal could be valued at, but I thought that both situations, the FIFA situation and the NBA negotiation, both indicate how eager streaming providers are to become involved with sports. And listeners will remember that I, as you may have said in the past, that because of the decline in traditional pay TV and therefore the ability of traditional networks, cable TV and broadcast networks, to sign ever larger distribution deals with the rights holders, that would ultimately impact the value of franchises and also the level of player compensation, except with the big caveat that if the streamers provide a backstop to all of this, that things will continue to roll on. And that, I think, remains a big question. But these two articles suggest that they are looking to come in here and could end up becoming a backstop. And of course, that would be very good news for the leagues and the teams and the players. So following these negotiations closely.
Yeah, me too, Will. I saw both of these pieces and were quite surprised about Apple going after this new FIFA tournament. Gosh, I don't know how the players and teams are going to find time to participate in yet another tournament. But it really does look like Apple set their hat at soccer as being a key property that they want to own. And I'm just wondering what this means when NBCU's deal with the Premier League comes up. Is Apple going to be competing for that? Anyway, I'm going to move on to my piece. My piece is Comcast announced their results here today. We're recording on Thursday, it's April 25th. And I just want to mention the fact that video continues to hemorrhage subscribers, down 1.9 million to 1.9 million over Q1 2023 to 13.6 million subscribers. And actually, interestingly enough, broadband lost subscribers for the first time for a full year, down 0.4% or 0.14 million to 32.2 million. That's a first for Comcast broadband. But what I really wanted to mention is actually Peacock continues to do extremely well. Apparently, they have done a great job at retaining the subscribers that they gained from that wild card game, the wild card NFL game, they were actually up 3.5 million to 34 million subscribers in the quarter. And Will, that's 55% increase year over year. Pretty impressive stuff. Revenue also increased, well, you would expect it to increase similarly, 54%. And I wanted to mention, yes, it's still losing a bunch of money, but the losses are decreasing. They lost $639 million on the quarter. That's a 22% reduction over Q1 2022. So it's heading in the right direction. Still a long way from profitable, but really, I think, very impressive performance. And I just wanted to mention something that Mike Cavanagh said. Mike Cavanagh is president of Comcast. He said, regarding Peacock, we are at a place now where we're really seeing traction in our approach to providing a service for consumers that is a combination of both entertainment and sports, and how these two go together, very much a reflection, as we said from the beginning, of our mirror image of what we see as our strength at NBC Universal itself. And I think it really is working out that way for Peacock. I think probably the only thing that they really need to add in here is a bunch of news, although they do have live feeds for local NBC affiliates where they're O&Os. So really good progress for Peacock.
And one other thing I'll mention also that I think he said on the conference call or in the press release was that value that they think they've created has enabled significant pricing power as well, which obviously should be read as we think we can increase prices going forward on Peacock. And we've seen a lot of that from streaming providers over the last couple of years. And I think that's part of the reason why we've also seen the churn rates we have. So it kind of remains to be seen. But Peacock certainly made progress. But as you said, still losing a bunch of money to the tune of about $700 million in the quarter.
Yeah, it is. But I think we should probably get on with our interview.
Yes, it is. And we are delighted to have Ron Guttman, who is the CEO of Wurl, which is a part of AppLovin, join us today. Hey, Ron.
Hi, happy to be here.
Okay, great. Happy to have you. So maybe we could just start off at the 30,000-foot level, and if you could share a brief overview of what Wurl does.
Absolutely. So Wurl is, in one sentence, we are a tech company, and our goal has been, since we started the company in 2017, to develop technologies to accelerate the shift from traditional TV to connected TV. And it started with the distribution. We did the first fast channel on Samsung at the end of 2018. Now we have 4,000 channels. We launched over 1,000 last year. Fast channels, a lot of content companies, a lot of content shifted with us, with our technology, from traditional TV to CTV. The second aspect is we're working with all the platform, all the Samsung, Roku, Vizio, LG, all the apps, Zoom, Plex, and others, to deliver the best experiences and the best digital technology on their apps and platforms. And the third aspect is migrating advertisers to CTV, where you get the best size screen, the best captive audience, unskippable ads, but also all the digital technologies that allow you to do smart targeting and measurement, frequency cap, reporting analysis, profiling, implement AI technologies. That's kind of where the new frontier is.
Okay, and thank you for that overview, picking up on that. Wurl just announced its brand discovery product. And that's really, I think, mainly why we're here today, is to talk about brand discovery and to talk about the AI layer that powers brand discovery. So tell us what brand discovery is and how it works and what opportunity Wurl sees here.
Yeah, there's actually a very interesting story behind how this product happened. But it all starts with the luxury that we have by being part of AppLovin. AppLovin is a huge performance marketing company in the mobile domain, very successful, very tech-oriented. And they acquired us. We are their CTV arm. Everything in CTV for the company is going through us. In order to bring mobile advertisers to CTV with performance, because everything is measured on mobile, you know exactly how good are your campaign. You see exactly who converted and how much they spend and how much they use the apps that they download. We kind of see, we have the luxury to see further on what will happen on the CTV domain when everything is more accurate, more AI driven, and more being able to be measured. And what happened about a year ago as we started to roll out all the mobile advertisers into CTV, it's still scaling, but it's really a nice growth. And we've seen that it's not enough that you know something about the people that are going to watch the ad. It matters a lot where they see the ad. If the same AI scored audience, or even the same person, if they're seeing an ad on different channels, even within the channel, different shows, even at the same show, different times, they're going to convert at completely different, like 200-300% range in terms of conversion rate, different, depending on where they see the advertisement. And it took me by surprise. I didn't expect it. I thought, okay, it's all about the audience. It's all about what they're going to like based on past history. But the only explanation to why they act so differently, statistical significantly differently, it has to be about the context. So there was something in the context that we realized we have to research. We have to know, because that will contribute to performance, which that's our main goal. And we observed, we researched, we scaled it up to almost all our inventory back in September. We measured ourselves. We found a really good model of exactly 8 features that are going to change everybody's life in terms of performance and contextual. And since September, we selected the select agencies to run performance campaign. We measured them. And once we had enough information, we released it exactly 4 weeks ago. And that's called Brand Discovery.
Very good. So give us an idea of the ecosystem that you had to put together to make this work. So talk about right. How this all, the ecosystem for the technology.
So that's a great question. So we're doing everything in the cloud because we are working with so many platforms, so many apps. We can't rely on anything that is going on in the client. It's all running in real time because FAST is real time. Most of the viewership, so another two interesting findings. Most of the viewership with apps that has FAST channels, have linear channels, is happening. Like 80-90% of the viewership happens on FAST compared to AVOD if you have FAST. So we have to include FAST, and we have to analyze everything we can do in real time because the context can change very quickly. So you have to analyze the scenes, the 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes just before the ad break to get the correct information. And the other thing that we've realized, and I don't really know why, but performance works much better on FAST compared to AVOD. People convert more. Why? I don't really have a psychological explanation to this. The best one I've heard is because people expect fast advertisement on linear channels. They're less disrupted, less annoyed by the advertisement. And the cutting places, because it was perfected, it's on television for so many years, feel less natural. Versus AVOD is just annoying. You want to watch something and it's just interrupting you. And so maybe people are just less open to suggestions that are in the advertisements when it's in AVOD versus FAST. But again, we have the luxury to see the future because everything we're doing on the mobile side is well measured. We know what's working, what's not.
So Ron, you just mentioned the scene analysis, staying essentially one step ahead. I'd like to circle back to ask you about that.
No problem.
But I don't want to lose the thread of what you said just prior to Colin's question, which is you mentioned that there are 8 features
right.
that drive the contextual performance. Could you just take us through to the best extent that you're willing what those 8
yeah.
features
oh, yeah.
are and how this works?
It's absolutely happy to talk about it. These features are working for us. That's what we're using and what we did with Brand Discovery. We just enable it for everybody. for free. We don't charge separately for those comments. That's kind of our deal with the publishers. You have access to all the contextual information segments. We integrate with all the SSPs, a lot of the DSPs. However you want to access this inventory, you can. We don't charge separately for the contextual information. You bid against all our other demand sources, and you know it's all auction based. The features that are working well are emotions. So I have a very interesting example with the movie Up. So it's supposed to be a comedy, it's supposed to be family, it's supposed to be fun. Actually, the first scene is very, very sad, where you know he's saying goodbye to his wife, and it's just very sad. And if you think you are going on a good movie, you put an advertisement that is funny. What we've seen that it's a we call it emotional dissonance. You'll put a happy advertisement after a sad scene. People disconnect. If they realize what the brand is, it will be terrible. It's negative attention. They will hate it. They will, I mean, on first, they change channel. They will abandon. There is abandonment, much higher abandonment when the emotion dissonance. On the other hand, when you have emotional resonance, if the emotional tone, and I'll talk about the model in a second, the emotional tone is exactly the same, completely different content, obviously, people pay more attention. They're more open to the advertisement. They convert 200-300% more. And, you know, we measure it. We knew about it. We released a case study with the Media Monk. It's a really good performance agency. And they've seen that all the entire funnel is just better, like 7x in brand awareness, 2x in purchase intent, when there is emotional resonance versus emotional dissonance. So we have more case studies that we'll release, but we see in more and more cases that it actually works. Not we didn't measure it on the other campaign for other agencies. They measure it, and they're coming up with quotes that are just confirming again and again that it works. I kind of tried to understand the science behind it. The 8 emotions are based on neurochemistry. So they're based first on a psychological model that's called the Plotchnik wheel, that all our emotions are based on 8 emotions, actually 4 pairs. So fear, anger, sadness, joy, anticipation, surprise, disgust, and trust. And it's later on, people found that it's all related to 4 hormones that are released in different situations. So cortisol is very known to be fight or flight. So if it's low, you'll be on a fear mode. If it's high, you'll be on anger. And serotonin low would be sadness, and high would be joy. So if you have high enjoyment, you have high joy emotion, you will react better to advertisements that are kind of the same emotional tone. And if there is a dissonance, it just doesn't feel your brain will just disconnect. And by the way, it's even worse. It's not just attention to the current brand. It's also how your brain will store the information, because we store the emotions together with the audio visual information that we get. So if a certain brand, certain logo is associated with anger, that's how we remember that brand forever. If we see this a brand again, it will retrieve the memory, and that's what we are going to feel. For example, I'll give you something new that we are seeing is that high anticipation works very well with food and beverage. Just one more minute. It's very interesting. It's all about dopamine analysis. So we know it from online gaming that it's all about regulating dopamine. But if you have low dopamine, which means high anticipation, happens a lot in sports and in other situations, you have a kind of emotional hunger. You have a low dopamine, and you want to regulate it. When we put advertisements that are related to food and beverages, this is what the memory stores. And in the future, if you see that logo, it will come up with that same emotion, and we see results that we will announce in a case study, hopefully next month, that you see that correlation, that it works much better if a person is craving. It's not really hungry, it's craving. Then if you put a food and beverage related campaign, it will work much better.
Ron, is there a type of content where this approach works better than others? You mentioned it works better in linear, in fast linear rather than on demand. But are there types like drama, comedies, kids content, or like you mentioned live sports? Do they work in live sports? Do they work in a particular moment in live sports?
We didn't get to that level of granularity because I think it's not, sports is just a proxy to what's going on with our emotions. We make our decisions based on our emotions. The emotions are regulated in the amygdala. Our decisions will change dramatically based on our emotions. We can't really, people try all their life to control it. We can't really, I don't think, control it. So we knew for a long time that sports is good for specific campaigns. That's the answer to your question, by the way. It depends on the campaign. So for financial services, trust is very important. For cars, anger is actually good. I don't know why.
Really?
Maybe it's a gender
thing. Shopping for a car right now. Maybe that explains why I'm so angry all the time.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be more open.
Maybe related to traffic, maybe.
could be.
Maybe that's how it's associated to us. I don't know why. We talked about food and beverage. It really depends on the campaign. So the content is just a proxy to the emotion. Many times in sports, you'll have high anticipation. The high anticipation is the thing. So when I watch an NBA game, I'm watching the playoff right now. It's just interesting what's going on. If I watch the whole game, there are a lot of places where I just wait for something to happen. I want to see. So that's high anticipation. That's low dopamine. That's really good for food and beverages in those breaks. But if I watch the highlights on YouTube, I don't have it. Doesn't happen. I don't have any craving because it's 10 minutes. It's just the highlights. It's a lot of surprise. It's exactly the opposite. It's quick dopamine gain. It's useless. So this is why maybe food and beverage don't work that well on TikTok because you don't have low dopamine. You have high dopamine so quick. That's kind of the things that AI allows you to do. You can detect so many signals that were hidden from us for so long, and then see how they behave in actuality.
That's a good segue, Ron. So let's maybe get into a little more about the mechanics of how brand discovery works. You mentioned earlier that you're essentially, as you said, you're kind of anticipating what the next 2 to 3 minutes of the content is going to look like, the emotions associated with those, in order to try to identify the most appropriate ad. First, can you just describe your process of how you're analyzing the content to anticipate what's coming up and the emotions associated? Just maybe as a first step, can you describe that? So, and also the role that AI plays in doing so.
Yeah. So that's an interesting aspect. I will tell whatever I can. So it's not anticipating. We are analyzing in real time what's going on right now. And what we're realizing, if you're watching a sad scene, you will be sad. Most people. I mean, if you pay attention, if you're really watching. If you're watching something that has a high anticipation, that's how you will feel. So we analyze the content itself that comes before the ad break. And it's most likely, maybe 90% of the people, we can anticipate how they feel when they watch a certain content. In real time. So we're using a lot of inferences, a lot of AI. We analyze the tone. There is a company called Hume AI that actually doing something similar to replace psychologists. They do psychology. They understand the emotions from your tone. We're doing something similar, obviously, for our purposes. We looked at the voice to text. So we analyze the text. Text many times is hidden information, but it's a good signal. It's the same signals that, by the way, people are detecting emotions. We detect emotions all the time. Because emotions are contagious, it's social defense mechanism. You know, you go to a room, everybody's laughing. You'll start to be happy. You're happy as well. It's just like this. You don't want to be weird. Everybody's sad and you come laughing and starting jokes. There is a reason why everybody, we subconsciously understand the emotions and we copy them. And that's just how humans behave. I did actually an interesting experiment when I walk my dog in the morning. I say hello to my neighbors. That's how it's done over here. And if I say hello when I'm smiling, they smile too. If I say hello when I'm angry, they're angry too. So like, we just copy everybody. Emotions, that's what happened to people when they watch content. So we analyze, all we really need to know how people feel is by analyzing the content. So we analyze the tone of the speech. We analyze the text. It's a good signal. Hello is not a good signal. We look a little bit just on some frames because it's a lot of compute on the facial analysis in a very low sample rate because that's expensive. And we have other parameters that are video related, related to scene change frequency and stuff like that. And we're using a lot of our own technology. We're using also a known AI services that are getting better on a daily basis from everywhere. And then, you know, then in real time we signal, so that you can think about the ad request comes with some metadata. By the way, most of the metadata is incorrect, so we update the metadata, we also add some brand safety parameters, but the most important features are the emotions. So we'll augment the ad request. These are the emotions right now. And we let everybody bid, and the highest bid win. That's how it's done digitally.
Ron, maybe we should switch and talk a little bit about the future, about where you see us going with the technology, in particular with brand discovery, but more generally with AI. How do you think it's going to impact us, particularly in the advertising space going forward?
Yeah, that's Scott Galloway said it, you know, well, paraphrase, marketers are not going to be replaced by AI. They will be replaced by people that use AI. And Sam Altman said lately that 95% of this task can be done better, just 95%. So there is always room for marketers to make a lot of decisions, but they can make decisions on a lot more data and a lot more possibilities. In creating creatives, in creating content, in making decisions. So even, you know, even if you let the machine make a bid by bid request decision making, how much they bid on and what content that provides the best results, there is still a lot of decisions that will be done by marketers forever. And we are just creating the tools to make it better. And again, we are lucky. We're lucky to be part of AppLovin that already did a lot of it in the mobile domain. It's predominantly performance with 100% measurement. So in TV, it probably won't be never 100% because it's such a good medium. Everybody is using it. So, you know, how do you measure the political performance? So you show the political ad. You don't know what happened with it lately. You know, in hindsight, what regions voted, but it's not complete accurate. It's only by panel. Also on automobile, you won't accurately measure everything like in mobile, but statistical is good enough. Polls are pretty accurate, especially if they're done on a big number, you know, the big number statistics. If they happen on big numbers, you can really drive a lot of conclusions. And the AI will not just create a lot of content, a lot of data signals like we are doing, we'll also be able to make split-second decisions on how much to bid, where to bid, that to optimize the KPI of your campaign.
Ron, we're just about out of time, but I just don't want to leave yet the conversation about how you guys are leveraging AI specifically with brand discovery and maybe more broadly speaking in world generally. Do you want to just maybe give us a minute or two? I know that's not a lot of time to describe how AI is powering brand discovery, but I think it would be valuable just to hear a little bit more specificity on that.
Yeah, so it's what I mentioned before. I can't say more than that. It's for brand discovery, we're using an eye to extract the data, to understand while okay. analyzing the content, what people are feeling, what the real genre is for the scenes that just before the ad break. And we have a 9 brand safety. If there is any profanity or nudity or language or guns, war, criminal related stuff. So people can, you get all those signals, and I've seen advertisers use some of those signals on top of the emotional resonance. So I want emotional resonance because then I can reduce the frequency to get the message. I improve my conversion. I improve my return on ad spend. But I also don't want my brand to be associated with crime, profanity. So I'm going to choose those. And maybe I want to avoid specific genres, so I'll choose all the other genres. So I've seen campaigners making those decisions. And the AI allow us to accurately measure all those contextual information in a scale and in accuracy that obviously would not be ever able to be done manually.
Well, that's great. Colin, I don't know if you had anything else for Ron or if we should let him go.
I'm just amazed at the functionality and the possibilities, Will. I was just thinking through, like in a football game, the ability to give a different ad based on if a break is because of an injury timeout or a field goal or a touchdown break, right? A break that comes right after that. But not only that, to differentiate it by region so that you give a different ad to somebody who's a home team fan in different it's just mind-boggling and really gives us an opportunity to optimize advertising in a way that we never could before. So just so many possibilities with the technology.
That's actually Ron, a really good idea. You agree.
I assume you agree with what Colin just said.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. We don't do that yet, but we definitely know the anticipation and the anger that is coming with sports. But that's a good idea to understand by location the sadness versus joy aspect of it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, when you execute on that idea, Ron, keep in mind it was Colin who provided it, and cut him in on a couple of bucks here and there, if you wouldn't mind.
And I do hope you'll come back, and as you get more experience with the technology, come back and tell us about some of the things that you've learned, because this has been an absolutely fascinating conversation. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having
me. Great. Thank you so much, Ryan. We appreciate it. And thanks, everyone, for listening in on this week's edition of Inside the Stream. We'll see you all again next week.
Inside the Stream is a production of InScreen Media and Video News. All rights reserved.